Great to have you back with us before the Guardians and the Giants play game two of this three-game series. It is DeSclafani today against Quantrill. And we welcome in Evan Wiebeck, and I've heard him on the air, folks, and he knows his baseball. He's a Giants beat writer for the San Jose Mercury News, and he is in Cleveland, and we welcome to the show. Evan, how are you?
Doing well, Marty. No pressure, right?
Not at all. First of all, how do you like Cleveland? Have you been there before?
I was here for about 24 hours previously covering the Warriors, so I've got a little bit of experience, but getting a good view of the town here. It's all right. It's a little chilly today. Wind blowing off of Lake Erie, but it was nice and warm yesterday. I got to walk around the town a little bit. Didn't get to visit the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame like Gabe Kapler did, but okay. I'll make my list for next time.
How about the Guardians? Art Deco Guardians that the team is named for. Have you seen that yet?
It's hard to miss walking into the ballpark. It definitely provides some context for the name. It makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah, the Guardians. I haven't said the other word yet today, so I'm proud of myself. I haven't slipped yet. But tell us a little of your background so folks get to know you and your baseball background, because you do a great job and we enjoy reading what you do and hearing you on the air.
Yeah, thanks. I really appreciate it. And it's so exciting to get a chance to do this for a living. It's something that I've dreamed of since I was a kid, growing up in the Seattle area. You know, my first formative memories are kind of that 2001 Mariners team that won 116 games with Ichiro and then later Felix Hernandez. And then the two decades of futility after that. So I've seen both sides of the spectrum. Definitely bring a bit of a cynical outlook to things from two decades of watching the Mariners. But yeah, it was a bond between me and my dad, as it is with so many boys and fathers. And it's something that he's really excited to see me turn into a profession, and it's something I'm equally excited to be. This Progressive Field is my first time here, but I think this is ballpark number 16 for me. So it's a goal to knock off all 30.
Pleasure. Evan Wiebeck with us. He covers the Giants for the Merc. What do you think opening day yesterday? And, of course, I want to ask you about Tom Hanks. What was he doing there, and what did he throw out?
Yeah, they put on a bit of a spectacle for opening night here in Cleveland. They got noted Guardians fan Tom Hanks to throw out the first pitch, and he brought out the Wilson volleyball with him. And it might have been remote controlled or something. Maybe it might have been the actual prop from the movie, because that thing was moving around the field. It was a little bit windy, but even beyond the wind, that thing was jetting around the infield as Tom tried to throw out the first pitch. And then he was actually in the suite right next to us in the press box. And he's maybe looking a little frail these days. And COVID.
Well, he is Tom Hanks, and he is a big, big star. And I thought it was a volleyball when I saw it. I said, is that a volleyball? So whatever. I'm glad you confirmed that. What do you think of the Jackie Robinson ceremony? And, of course, he threw the Wilson the volleyball to Larry Doby Jr., who we've had on the show before. And, of course, his dad integrated the American League July 5th, 1947. What did you think about the opening ceremonies?
Yeah, I mean, it was a great ceremony, and being in Cleveland is all the more special, being where Larry Doby broke into the American League, and it was great to have his son on hand. And you know, it was kind of coming on the heels of this incident in San Francisco with Antoine Richardson and the Padres third base coach Mike Shilty. They obviously have kind of patched amends since then, but you know, it was hard not to see the contrast and the context of Antoine Richardson kind of saying that Shilty said some things with possibly, you know, racist connotations to him only a couple days before Jackie Robinson Day, celebrating the integration of the sport. You know, it's kind of clear that, you know, baseball is this kind of old school game, and there's a lot of old school attitudes left, but it's making progress, but there's still, you know, a long ways to go here. And as we've seen with the declining number of black players participating in Major League Baseball. It's a pervasive story for sure.
Yeah, Dave Roberts talked about that yesterday. That was one of his points. What does Jackie Robinson mean to you? Now, for me, I grew up watching him. I was actually in Brooklyn, so I could see him. But you're a younger person. What does he mean to you?
Yeah, Jackie, I mean, he kind of embodies just the style of play that you want to see. You know, to me, he was obviously first and foremost the barrier breaking, the groundbreaking, a player who you know tore down the racial lines of baseball. But to me, the most exciting part of Jackie was always, and obviously I did not get to see him play when he was around, but watching highlights, it's just the way that he steals bases, that he hits at the plate, just a very aggressive, fun style of play that it seems like, frankly, the Giants are kind of getting back to this year. You know, Kapler is really kind of preaching aggressiveness in a lot of aspects of the game, whether it be base running or playing the outfield or even at the plate. And I think that that's a good thing for the game, because if we get more players playing like Jackie Robinson played, I think it's going to be an easy way to draw fans back to the game.
Boy, you brought up some good points there. Austin Slater made the catch to end the game last night. It wasn't a game-saving catch, but certainly didn't hurt. And they commented on the air that that was an aggressive play and doing just what you said they should do.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that they're asking their outfielders, something that they've been kind of implementing over the last few years, this attitude that, you know, okay, if you come in aggressively on balls, maybe like a few of them are going to get past you and they're going to go for triples and it's going to sting. But Gabe Kapler is pretty confident that over the long run, if you're coming in aggressively on all the balls that are hit to you, it's going to pay off because you've got momentum coming to the plate. You're going to get better throws. There's a chance that you're going to make those plays like Slater did last night in left field for the 27th out, where you dive and actually come up with it. Or somewhere in the middle ground earlier this week, and when Slater was playing right field, he came in, dove for a ball, didn't make the catch, but he trapped it in his glove and prevented guys from advancing. So, you know, it's something that Kapler says, like, he keeps preaching the long game and the 162-game season, and even if some of these decisions are going to backfire in the short term, they are pretty confident that over 162 games, it's going to be a net positive.
Well, they are running the bases better, going first to third, and they are laying down bunts, not including Dubon here, but they are bunting a little more against the shift, and it's actually paid off. So that is the aggressive style that Gabe Kapler is talking about. Evan Weback is our guest here. Carlos Rodon, the game he threw last night was just masterful. 7 innings, a couple of hits, a run, 9 strikeouts. To me, the biggest part was in the first inning he was throwing 97, and in the last inning, the 7th, when he was really laboring at that 90th pitch, he threw 99. How about that?
Yeah, this is a guy who only, I mean, he kind of pitches off of the crowd and the situation, and he gets hyped on the mound. He's a guy who can get into the zone, and that's what happens as he gets later into starts. He kind of runs off of this adrenaline and is able to pump up these fastballs at 98, 99 miles an hour, even at the very end of his outing, whereas maybe you don't quite have that same adrenaline on in the first or second inning. But as we saw last night, I mean, he doesn't need that adrenaline if that's what he's doing in the first 5 innings. It was kind of funny. It was like a tale of 2 outings almost, and between his first start and his second start, and even between the first 5 innings and the last 2 innings last night, right? I mean, it's hard to tell which is more impressive or more effective, but the man made it through 5 innings on 47 pitches last night. It looked like he was possibly lining up for a Maddux even on a pitch count. But then you look at his first start, and he's got 12 punch-outs in 5 innings and some of the most swings and misses on that pitch count in the StatCast era since they started tracking in 2008. I mean, all in all, it's made for one of the most impressive starts to a season, one of the most Giants debuts I'm sure you can remember. And I mean, when you think about the 1-2 punch that they have at the top of that rotation with Logan Webb, who went 8 innings in his last start, I mean, it's hard to think of a better 1-2 punch in baseball right now.
No, I agree. And you bring up a good point, and that is he's a max effort guy. Those last 2 innings were just something else to see him rear back, because he walked a couple of people. All of a sudden, the tying runs are on base, and is he going to get to Ramirez or not? And he just, took care of the hitters he had to take care of. But where will he be in August? Now, this is April 15th, and he's going 90 pitches, 7 innings, and he worked hard. This is a guy who had some shoulder fatigue last year, and I said to myself, does he really need the 7th inning here? The bullpen is rested. It's a good bullpen. Were you surprised at all that he came out for the 7th and he was thinking, you know, well, where's he going to be in August here?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a valid concern for a guy who, like you said, basically, I mean, he was in line for the American League Cy Young through the first half, maybe even three quarters of last season, and then kind of the shoulder broke down in September. But you have to remember that he hadn't thrown more than 120 innings for 4 seasons before that. He threw 132 last year. So it was kind of a matter of building up the baseline for what they can expect to get out of him. And I think that they're confident that after kind of having a stable of 132 innings last year to build off of, that they can rely on him for more going into September this year. But it's a valid point because basically everybody in this rotation kind of has some serious injury history or has not pitched through an entire major league season before, which is why they brought in guys like Jacob Junis, like Carlos Martinez, like Matthew Boyd, who can come in and slot in at the middle of, in the middle of the season and maybe take a little bit of the load off, so you're not relying on Rodon or Webb or Descalfani, whoever, for 30, 31 starts, but maybe 26, 27 starts. And then maybe you're able to get that 99-mile-an-hour fastball on the 90th pitch in August and September from Rodon if everything goes well.
All right, good point. That's a good point. They have a lot of guys in the wings here. But, yeah, it made me nervous watching it last night. I said, my God, where's he going to be August 15th if he's throwing the ball like this? So good point. Now, the bats are a little slow coming around. You know, the team batting average is 230 or maybe even less than that, something like that. But they did crush the ball last night, and maybe the most impressive one was Bart. He got a hanger, and I'll tell you something, when he gets a hanger, he doesn't miss it. And he sent a missile out there last night.
I think it might have been faster than a missile, Marty. It was
109
miles an hour off the bat. Yeah, and you know, the thing is, like, the Giants offense hasn't necessarily been producing on at a consistent rate, but I think if you look at the Statcast data, they're hitting the ball hard at a consistent rate, and it's not necessarily paying off for them. I know there are a couple that stick out in my mind, particularly off the bat of Jock Peterson, who went yard last night too, and Darren Ruff, I think, and Brandon Crawford, who have all had these 100-plus mile-an-hour exit velocities where they barrel up the ball, but it just goes straight to a defender, or in the case of sometimes the defenders have made incredible plays and prevented that. So I think it's a bullish sign for the Giants offense in the long run, even if you still have to have some lingering concerns about a lineup that they didn't really add much to in the offseason.
No, they're hitting the ball hard, and, of course, Crawford had the home run last night too and got him going. And that's the thing, they get the lead early. They get the lead early, and I think there's been a stat on that they're outscoring teams in the first couple of innings, and they did it again last night. One guy who's struggling a little bit for me and is a little bit of a concern with Estrada, and I said this earlier in the week when I was on, I said, boy, he's never going to see another fastball because this guy can turn around a fastball, and I'm watching it, and just about every at-bat they're working him with off-speed stuff, curveball, change, things like that. Do you see that with Estrada?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the diet for a lot of young hitters, right? You come up to the big leagues, and anybody can hit a fastball, and Tyro's clearly proven that. He obviously had that big home run in the first series of the year. But, yeah, I mean, it's kind of it's a feeling out process for any young hitter. And I'm sure Joey Bart's going to have the same experience this year too. You know, a guy who can obviously crush fastballs and has struggled with the breaking ball and strikeouts throughout his minor league career and his early major league career. So, I mean, that's kind of the feeling out process for any young hitter in the majors, right? Is you're going to come up and pitchers are going to adjust and you're going to adjust back. And it's kind of a battle of who wins those adjustments to see who can succeed. And the Giants, I mean, they've been very outwardly excited, high on Estrada. He's the guy who used to be Yankees' top prospect and came over after he was waived by the Yankees. And the Giants believe that he still has the potential to be that guy. And I mean, he's shown it in flashes. I mean, he had an OPS over 800 and limited experience last season and obviously had the home run in the first series this year. So he's a guy that the Giants are pretty confident is going to turn it around, but maybe he has to do it quicker than maybe expected with Tommy La Cella on the mend. He's a guy maybe could, steal some of that playing time from La Cella if he's producing at a rate. Obviously, is a more capable defender at second base. But if he's not hitting the ball and he's not able to hit breaking balls and off-speed pitches, that's not going to be a sustainable situation.
Boy, we love baseball. What a great story. Every day it's another story, and today you're going to be able to write about Quantrill and Disco, DeSclafani, and who knows what's going to happen. But, Ev, thanks for being on the show. We love having you on, and you can come back anytime, so I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me, Marty.
Okay, that's Evan Wiebeck. He is the Giants beat writer for the San Jose Mercury News. More coming up, KMBR 680, 104.5, the sports leader.